Hi, and welcome to the Three Good Podcast, a weekend podcast where I talk about all things to do with positive psychology, well-being, resilience, mental health, and emotional intelligence. I'm your host, Sukh Pabia. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 33 of Three Good Podcast. Happy Friday to you all, folks. I haven't recorded a podcast episode on a Friday in a long time. It's about 5 o'clock in the evening. I've got a bottle of beer cracked open. It has got dark already. Autumn is clearly upon us. And as my listeners will know, I'm not a fan, folks. These early nights that draw in, just not my thing, you know. When it gets to about 4:30 and it's already getting dark, and then it gets to 5 o'clock, 5:30, and it's, you know, there's no daylight at all. Oh well, such is life. I hope you've had a good week, folks. I hope things are going well for you all in different ways. Yesterday was a fun Halloween. I got home and I decided to get my werewolf mask out, and we had some trick-or-treaters come along. A little brother and sister came up to the door and they started scrambling over the sweets about which one they were going to have. And then their mum brought their little, must have been little brother, along, and couldn't have been more than a year old. Saw the mask I was wearing. The kid started crying and took off the mask immediately. I don't want any kids to cry when they come to the house for Halloween. Like, I know it's meant to be scary and Halloween is all about horror and thrills and all that kind of stuff, but I don't actually want any kids to cry over this stuff. So, took it off and he was okay. My daughter dressed up as a witch. She looked pretty awesome. She did her eyes with that with a red deepness to it, so it looked like she had bloody eyes, and that was pretty cool the way she'd done that. And I'm pretty pleased with the pumpkin I'd carved a carving of Jack the Pumpkin King. Nightmare Before Christmas is probably one of my favorite films of all time. I think I can quite confidently say that it really is. And I don't know, you know, there's an ongoing question about, is it a Halloween film or is it a Christmas film? And it's a really good question, because the main thrust of it is, spoiler alert, Jack as the Pumpkin King is bored of Halloween and he wants to discover something new. He discovers Santa and Christmas and there's joy, and he tries to do that and he gets it all incredibly wrong. So is it about Christmas? Is it about, and he realizes that he is the Pumpkin King and he rules Halloween. So is it about Halloween? Is it about Christmas? Who knows? It's a good one. I like the debate around it. I really don't have an opinion about it one way or the other. It's something I do probably watch more at Christmas. And I think for no other reason than it has Christmas in the title, most likely. So there we have it. So, what are we going to talk about in this episode? I've been thinking a lot over recent months about this concept of doing the work, you know, and I think it's an interesting concept to think on. And when I hear people talking about doing the work, and it can sometimes seem like a really vague thing. And I think what I understand by it, when I hear that kind of phrase, is really becoming more self-aware. I think that's what it's talking about, you know. It's a deep level of self-awareness and doing the work to continually allow that to be a thing in your life. And I think it can be one of these things which presents itself as a real challenge, because it really does mean having to devote time, energy, and yourself to trying to figure out what does that self-awareness mean and why do we do it. So when we think about that, And for me, I think it comes back, well, not comes back to anything in particular. I think where it started for me, I mean, it's been a very regular thing for me, over the years, since I did my psychology degree, through to getting my first career within learning development and starting that process of delivering training and then leadership management type stuff and personal development type activities. A key part of that is having a sense of your own awareness of how do I do on these things so I can talk about them in meaningful ways with others. And then over the years, I started to get more interested in topics like emotional intelligence and positive psychology, and in recent years, more around resilience and well-being. And what really started to come together for me was that the ways that you can understand yourself can be, it is rather, an ongoing process. But not just that it's an ongoing process, it's stuff which, if you allow yourself, there can be really deep thinking about. And some years ago, I started talking with a coach who really helped me in this space, really started to help me consider who am I? What are my core strengths, signature strengths? I remember we spoke about at the time. And I've spoken about strengths before on the podcast, and there is an episode dedicated to that. And I remember at the time thinking about that topic and being quite revelatory for me, really thinking about what is my signature strength? What is the thing that defines me as me? And it was a real light into my own sense of self-awareness. And at the time, I defined it as positive deviance. And if you haven't heard that term before, it means finding a way to positively circumvent stuff, basically, in a way. I think that's one way to describe it. So if there's a system and there's a way of doing things, you can overcome it by, breaking the system and purposefully doing things in a bad way to get your result. And there's a way to be able to do that in a way which is helpful to you and helpful to others. And it also gets you to think about things in different ways. So that, and that really for me stuck. It really stuck. It struck a really deep resonant chord with me around who I am. That was probably about 7 or 8 years ago that I'd started on that kind of process, right? That kind of thinking pattern of who am I? What does this mean to me? And I probably didn't realize it at the time. But that was the start of my work on me. That was where I started that stuff. And then along the way, various life stuff happened. And different moments in time demanded that I really examine who I was, who I am, how I was acting in certain ways, how I was thinking about certain things, and what choices and decisions I was making based on those thoughts and beliefs that I was holding on to. And it's fair to say that some of that was influenced by my partner at the time. And I think that's a very normal, natural thing that happens. You try to understand what your partner needs, and you try to understand what they want, and so you try and do what you can within your power to meet those expectations. Then you add into that that your children also have their own development to go through, and they and you as a parent, and I as a parent, I certainly realized that there was regular work I needed to do there, right? It was one way during the first year, second year evolves, continues to evolve. The boys are now 12, my daughter is now 9. And what they need from me now was is different to what they needed from me 2 years ago. And I have no idea what they're going to need from me in a few years' time. And it's, I find that a fascinating thing as well, on who am I as a father? How do I parent my children? What does that say about me? What do they experience as from me as a as their dad? And does it, do I give them stuff to think about in ways which are helpful? And when I do things which are unhelpful and that are unconstructive, I don't know if that's the right word. And it's not because I'm doubting the word, I just don't know if it's the right way to describe what I'm trying to say. It's further learning, right? It's further awareness for me. And there are plenty of times I do things which I know that's not the way I would want to do them, but I've made a certain choice. I need to follow that through. And it means that it means that I follow through a certain line of thinking. And then at some point in the future, I might even contradict what that originally was. But that happens. With my friends, it happens as well. There's friendships I have where I know that there's clear boundaries around what those friendships are. We will only meet at certain times, or we will only talk about certain topics, and we only do things in certain ways. That's fine. I understand what those parameters and boundaries are. And then I have my other friends with whom I can be very open and very free and happy to engage in quite a range of activity and have some really deep, proper conversations about stuff. And I understand what that is. But and each of those types of relationship helps me to understand who I am, helps me to understand what I bring to those types of relationships I have. And I also think about the many things that are happening in modern society. In the last episode, I spoke about how social media is a content creation set of tools, and it doesn't really encourage the behaviors of empathy. And I think the another aspect around social media is that you have such unlimited access. When I say unlimited, of course it's limited by what people share, but that you have such open access to such a wide variety of people, their thinking, arguments they're trying to put forward. And through any and all of that, the topics that I find myself as often being attracted to or interested in or intrigued by and wanting to read about further, it further challenges my awareness, challenges what I think about different situations. And as a prime example, or two prime examples, sexism and misogyny, things that happen around those topics regularly to women in many, many, many different ways, and also how masculine thinking is informed by such things, and how we as men think about our roles as men in society. I think that is, I think the two things are, sexism and misogyny are the quite high prevalent things to think about and force me as a man to consider what is my role as a man in all of this. How am I showing that I can, that I want to be a an empathetic person who understands different situations. I'm not being judgmental about different things that I see and experience. Where I see things that are happening in bad and harmful ways, I'm calling those out. Where I see that there are men who are being misogynists and sexist in what they're doing, I raise that and I try and do it in a way which is helpful. And I also challenge myself as well around what are my own practices, what's my own language I'm using around these things. And I think there's a lot there, right, that just I get caught up in, but it really does force me to think about myself. So the work continues. And then I also just think about myself. What do I need? Who is Sook? What does Sook look like in the absence of these things? Who is it that I want to be? Who do I aspire to be? What kind of ambitions am I setting for myself? What kind of goals do I have for myself? And are they in service of others? Are they linked to my own selfish needs? On what basis am I making decisions? What kind of values am I trying to uphold? What kind of beliefs do I want to make sure that I am clear about? And how do I help others to know what my values are and what my beliefs are? This continues to be the work as well. And what I find fascinating about all of this is that I think it takes courage to allow yourself to get to these places. It takes courage to want to explore these and have open and transparent conversations with others about these types of things as well. Not everyone is comfortable having conversations about their thinking processes, their emotions, the way that they go about making their decisions, the values they have. People feel quite protective about all of that. And rightly so. And I think one of the reasons we get protective about a lot of that is we haven't genuinely explored what those things mean to us. So we know we might think a certain thought, but have we genuinely allowed ourselves to explore fully what that means in a way which holds meaning for us and is clearly something that other people can identify in us as well? And I think this is, this can partly explain things like when people are clearly being racist or clearly being sexist, and you confront them with that and you show them how they have done exactly that, and they get defensive about it. Often it's because they may understand that what they've done is racist and is sexist, but they can't explain where it's come from because they haven't allowed themselves to interrogate a line of thought. And so when it comes to people like Katie Hopkins or David Duke or Donald Trump, who are clearly prejudiced in so many ways against minority ethnic groups, against women, against foreigners of any sort. It's what's fascinating to me about that is they are clear about that. They don't try and hide it. They are outrightly telling you what they think and believe. And they're not even trying to pretend to be anything else. And I think this presents a really interesting thing around authenticity, because they are genuinely being authentic, because they're telling you what they're thinking and saying. And I think one of the reasons they're able to do that and why people listen is because they understand that about themselves. And when people hear what they have to say and they hear it being articulated in a way which uses clear language and it allows people to resonate with that kind of understanding and insight, it becomes quite potent and powerful. But that's also where the danger lies around, I think, an awareness, a level of self-awareness which lacks a moral center. And even there, those kinds of individuals will argue that they have a moral center, that their moral center is centered around things such as the rights of men, the rights of white people, the rights of privilege. And And what can be really difficult about that is if you follow things from a logical perspective, from a point of logic, then you can argue a lot of things in an articulate way, even though they may be morally abhorrent. And I think this is one of the key things around self-awareness and the challenge of self-awareness is that sometimes we can really struggle with, well, if I understand this about myself, does that mean I'm a good or a bad person? And we get wrapped up in a lot of judgment. We get wrapped up in a lot of guilt, maybe, around these things. And you know, when I hear Brené Brown talk about such things around understanding who you are and how you express that to others, that vulnerability that comes with that, we've been conditioned so hard around protecting who you are and valuing who you are as an individual that we've really need to, I think, rebalance that with it's really great to understand that about yourself. And what we need to do is encourage greater levels of self-analysis on what does that mean for me? How do I want to act in ways which I believe to be good and helpful towards others? And that moral guidance that needs to come with that. And the, you know, this, I think there's further thinking there around when we consider if I understand that I have certain thoughts or beliefs. So say for example, I believe that say for example, I am a hardworking working class man who lives in a one bedroom flat. And I believe that I will never become a rich person because it's out of my remit, it's out of my not responsibility, it's out of my capability to be able to get there. And I'm never going to come up with that £1 million idea that is going to enable that to happen, or I'm never going to gain that popularity that's going to enable me to have money. That kind of thinking can easily then lead on to a set of thoughts around how rich people are bad, how they do not help society, how there is an elite, how educated folks are privileged more than others. And that can easily turn into negative behaviors and negative thinking as well. Equally, we could take that kind of insight about oneself, take that belief and encourage someone to think, how could they think differently about that kind of situation, about that kind of reality? And it's not to spin it, but it's to enable someone to consider what else could be happening for them. Because we're not just made up of one set of beliefs, we're made up of multiple beliefs. And I think what can happen is sometimes we get drawn into a particular belief as that being the driving factor around what else we do in life. That's just not, I don't think that's a helpful way for us to be, you know. So, for example, if we take somebody like Katie Hopkins, she has a family, she has children, she has a husband, and one of the things that we regularly hear her talk about is the problems that white people face in society. And without having had the opportunity to talk to her, it's easy to be able to think, oh, well, she's just clearly being racist. Much of the time, she is clearly being racist. Let's not beat around that. I'm not trying to deny that in any way. She is a racist woman. It is her MO. That is how she thinks that she needs to behave. Where I think we can offer a different perspective on things is how can somebody like her also consider other things that are important to do. So things like charitable behavior. How do we encourage someone like her, people that listen to her, to be more charitable towards others, to be more empathetic towards others? How do we enable someone like her to genuinely understand the struggles that are faced by people who aren't minority ethnic groups? And she, yeah, and I think she, it's what can be challenging about this is that her self-awareness allows her to know that she doesn't want to explore those things because it doesn't serve her needs, doesn't serve her current state. And that current state has been a current state for many years, right? So again, I'm not dismissing or denying anything that she does. She, in much of what we see and experience of her, it's a lot of that is done in very, very negative, with very negative outcomes and consequences. Because we see how people react to her. People react quite viscerally towards her. That's not a normal reaction when someone is saying kind things, empathetic things, compassionate things. When people take that kind of la when people use that kind of approach and that kind of language, the reaction they normally receive from others is of love, of heart, of connection, of growth. So I think when we come to think about how do I keep how do I build this self-awareness? What can I do around that? It can come in so many different forms, and I don't think there's any one way which is better than others. There are some ways which I think have been proven to be helpful. One of those is simply by talking to others. You know, talking to your partner, talking to your friends, talking to trusted loved ones, or those trusted friends, where you can have that open conversation and say, I want to try and understand myself better, who I am, what I think. And what I think can be helpful about those kind of conversations is we allow ourselves the time and space to have those discussions. You know, we don't have to be deep psychological experts or psychiatrically trained in order to have these conversations. It's very possible to have really strong self-awareness just by having really great conversations about this is my thinking process, this is what I'm feeling at this moment, and these are the, this is what that means to me. And you know, just because we act in one way and think in one way at one moment isn't indicative, it's not predictive of how we are going to be tomorrow. If there's a pattern of behavior, then that's probably more predictive and indicative, but doesn't always mean that there is going to be a clear predictive action or behavior that's going to happen. You know, people can be very surprising when they do improve and gain their self-awareness of how they are and what kind of things they do. You know, it's funny lit watching the latest season of The Good Place, which I love, by the way. It's a fantastic show. And in the last season, they have a character who is quite clearly a narcissist, and he struggles at a fundamental level with any kind of empathy or any kind of charity towards others. And they're trying to find different ways to get him to behave in ways which are more compassionate and more empathetic towards others. And he just can't do it. And it's really funny, how the kind of ways that they get him to do it and his reactions to stuff. And you know, I think what it picks on and plays on in that kind of example is how that kind of individual has an awareness of who they are, and they just don't want to interrogate it any further. I think this also starts to talk to, you know, what kind of activities do we find that we personally find helpful or meaningful. And I think one of the ways, or rather one of the things that sits behind that is, what is it that is motivating me to act in this way? You know, what are those beliefs about myself or others that I think I need to hold on to, which will often drive a certain type of behavior, you know? If I feel the need to have to be popular, have to be talked about, then I will say and do things which will make others do that. If I feel the need to have to be wealthy, then I'm going to follow a certain type of behavior that's going to mean that happens as well. You know, if I have to be looking a certain way, that's also going to generate a certain type of actions and behaviors which are going to just lead towards that. All of those things, I think, are worth, is also where the work happens. You know, the work happens at that superficial level as well as the deeper level. You know, and the questions asked around why is it that you're acting in these ways? Powerful questions. If the person is willing to respond and think about those things. So if they want to be the person who's popular and is being spoken about, where is that coming from? And not to dismiss that that person has that desire or need, but to help them try and uncover, are there other things going on in their life which could be more meaningful and more beneficial to themselves and others beyond something which is primarily individualistic and selfish? And I think what's happening a lot in not just modern society, I mean, you know, some philosophers have been writing about these things for literally hundreds of years, about the challenge of your own selfish desires against the desires of the community or the society that you're in. And there are people who will quite clearly advocate for both of those positions as being very valid positions to take. I see that too. I don't think we can judge others if they choose to make selfish decisions. If they choose to make selfish decisions and individualistic decisions, they have a set of reasoning that goes with that. I think the challenge lies in how do we help them to understand that that kind of decision making, that kind of choice, it drives a certain kind of behavior, and it means there are going to be certain kinds of relationships that they're going to have. And again, it's then just up to the individual if they choose to continue with that. If they do, then that's their choice and that's their life, and we have to accept that with others. So I think when we talk about this whole concept of the work, what am I doing with the work? Am I doing the work on me? It's taken me years to understand that I'm comfortable to do this, that there are different times when I need very different things in order to do that work for me. You know, there are times when I'm ready to go really deep into it and I want to explore some really fundamental things about what I'm thinking and why I'm thinking of those things. And then at other times I just want to be able to just have an easy conversation about some stuff and not think deeply about things. And what I've also learned is that I have grown the capacity to allow that self-awareness to come through at really, really hard times. So there's been some, over the years, there've been various difficult, very difficult moments. And at those peak moments, what I've really had to understand about myself is that you can be mindful, you can be emotionally aware of what's going on. You can really have that self-awareness of how you are in that moment and decide to take certain choices. And again, I think this is also another aspect of how self-awareness can be a very helpful thing, where you understand that that's what's happening and you need to make a certain choice in order to improve what you're feeling in that situation or however you need to deal with it. Because often what can happen when people are facing quite emotionally challenging and difficult times is that they struggle to know how to resolve that in a way which is helpful and healthy for them. And we see this happening in all sorts of ways. People will turn to alcohol, they'll turn to drugs, they'll turn to violence, they'll turn to dismissive behavior, frivolous behavior. There's so many ways that people will try and not deal with situations that they're facing with because they haven't allowed themselves that time and space. They haven't had that quality of thinking to be able to help them get to that kind of space. That can be really tough. I find it tough, it's, I don't find it easy to have these kind of thoughts where I think I need to think further and better about stuff. Sometimes I just want to allow things to just be and just carry on, And at the same time, I know that if I let that kind of superficial response keep on going for too long, I'm just not doing myself any good. I'm just not doing myself, and I'm not helping myself to get better. And so that comfort I've created around that deeper level of thinking has taken a lot of time and many conversations with so many different people. And I'm really grateful that I've been able to do that with a lot of people as well. Open up to them in very, very many different ways. Invite people into my life to help them understand what I'm going through at a particular moment in time. And what I've learned is that different people are right at different times. Just because I've spoken to one friend in one way over a certain period of time doesn't mean that I expect them to have to maintain that level of openness and relationship several years later. It was right for what it was. It doesn't mean it has to continue. And it doesn't mean that they're any less of a friend because we don't have that kind of conversation anymore. We don't do those kind of things anymore. This kind of, I think the work, the self-awareness of the in this kind of way means that we accept that there, at different times we need different things. And that's okay. There's no hard and fast rule that says that if you don't have these things lined up in this way all the time, then you're going to be in trouble. I think at each different moment in our lives, we have things present and available to us to help us deal with things. And it's our thinking about those things. Are those things that that you can look at and understand that they have a place? It's you can work with that, and you can use that not in a selfish way, but you can use that to help you to think about things in a good way, healthy way. Or do you find that those things are not the things that you need at that moment in time? So I think that's probably a good place to try and wrap things up and try and bring them to an end for today. The work is ongoing for me. I feel quite personally capable of how I'm doing this work. I'm pleased I have a really good set of friends around me who with whom I can have these deep thinking conversations. I don't know if I knew I had that years ago. I think back to when I was in my 20s. I didn't know I needed this kind of thing back then. And now I'm in my 40s. I know that this is stuff which is vital to my self-care and vital to my well-being. I'm grateful I have the time and the thinking space to be able to explore this in myself, and that I've got people around me who can help me to have those conversations in really healthy ways. So, folks, I'm going to invite you to think about these things for yourself as well. What does self-awareness mean for you, and how do you create that moral guidance for yourself? And when we develop further and deeper self-awareness, what does that mean for you, and how do you choose to act on that in ways which are going to help you to make your decisions which are better and good for you? I hope you have a good weekend, everyone, and I'll catch you on the next episode. As always, if you've liked this episode and you want to let me know, then please do like it in your chosen podcasting app. And if you want to leave me a comment, you can always contact me on Twitter or get in touch with me over on LinkedIn. Thanks very much. Take care. Bye bye.